Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Mr. Chairman, there are 23 ayes and 17 noes.
The article is agreed to. The resolution is amended as ordered, reported favorably to the House.
After more than 12 hours of debate last night, it took less than 10 minutes for members of the House Judiciary Committee to approve two articles of impeachment against President Trump, one for abusing his power by pressuring Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden, the other for obstructing Congress's investigation.
It has been a wild, historic week. Let's bring in our roundtable, Rick Klein, political director at ABC News. Hi, Rick.
Hey, great to be with you.
And Susan Davis, congressional correspondent for NPR. Hi, Sue.
Hey there.
And Rick, why don't we start with you? A marathon of testimony last night, both sides sticking to the script the entire time. Here's ranking Republican member Doug Collins, who was outraged when the chairman, Jerry Nadler, abruptly postponed the vote until this morning.
The committee is in recess.
Chairman, you chose not to consult the ranking member on a schedule issue of this magnitude?
Really? So typical.
This is the kangaroo court that we're talking about.
She's outrageous.
It's more Stalinist than...
So that's how last night ended, and this morning, of course, the historic vote along party lines. Rick, your thoughts on the last 48 hours?
The whole episode felt like it ended with a bit of a whimper after all of the fireworks the last couple of weeks. We knew exactly how it was going to end, and whether it was in the middle of the night or the middle of the day today, it was exactly a party line vote. And strangely to me, it didn't have the historic trappings and the feeling that this was truly a momentous occasion, because we knew how it was going to end. And the fact is, we sort of know how it's going to end in the Senate as well. None of that takes away from how big a deal this is. It seems like an odd conclusion to a pretty wild couple of months.
Interesting. Susan, I want to ask you about President Trump and his response. He's been advised by some Republicans not to participate in what they call an ambush. Today, he called the process a sham and said Democrats are trivializing impeachment. He doesn't really appear to be in any danger of losing Republican support. I'm thinking about back during the Clinton impeachment. Will this impeachment in the House change his presidency?
Well, he does join a group of presidents. There's been only four that have either been impeached or faced impeachment proceedings. So it's not a group of that he would want to be included in. But he is unique also in the fact that he is now the only president who will seek reelection as an impeached president. The previous impeachments, presidents had already been reelected. They were not up for reelection. So this is really politically new ground for this country and for this president.
I just wanted to say that in Republicans, supporters of the president say that is a good thing that he's going into the election in this situation, because the base has never been as fired up as it is.
Well, here's the thing. When you look at the polling pretty consistently, this is a country that says what the president did was wrong. Super majorities of people do not think that those actions were appropriate for the president. Where the country is more divided is whether they warrant removal from office. And what we have seen is that this is a country fairly evenly divided, but the slight advantage to the Democratic argument that not just that he should be impeached, but that he should be removed from office. Mm-hmm. So think about that being the sort of tableau of a mood of the country that the president's going to have to seek reelection, as half the country already thinks he shouldn't even be allowed to hold the office.
Yeah. So the articles are going to go to the full House for a vote next week. Walk us through what happens next, Rick.
Well, the schedule is going to be set by House leadership, and we're looking at the middle of the week. Intriguingly, this is all happening before Christmas. They have enough time to do this, and if they do vote on the floor of the House on Wednesday, they still have time to approve the USMCA, the trade deal the president wants, delivering a huge legislative priority just before Christmas as well. So it'll be an odd week again, but the history day looks most likely to be around Wednesday. We should note that President Trump has a rally that night, and Democrats have a debate the next day. So there's a whole lot of fireworks ready to happen right before the holidays.
Well, here's the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi predicting how that vote will go.
People have to come to their own conclusions. They've seen the facts as presented at the Intelligence Committee. They've seen the Constitution as they know it. They take an oath to protect and defend it, but they see the constitutional experts speak about it. They'll make their own decisions. I don't say anything to them.
So, Sue, Democratic leaders there are saying they're not going to whip this vote. They're not going to force anyone to vote any way in particular. But where are we on those moderate Democrats who may vote no to impeach?
I don't think Democrats are worried about this vote. They're not whipping it because they don't have to. If you look at the vote today in the Judiciary Committee, I look at Democrats like Lucy McBath, who's on the Judiciary Committee. She represents a suburban Atlanta district. It's very Republican. Donald Trump carried it in 2016. She voted yes today. If Democrats like Lucy McBath are siding with impeachment, I don't think Nancy Pelosi has at all to worry where the votes are. A little bit of math. Democrats can lose up to 17 Democrats and still pass articles of impeachment. So they do have a fair bit of wiggle room. And yes, some defections are expected.
But that doesn't hurt the spirit of Democrats if they get defections?
I don't think so. I think in some ways the Democrats that have to be no's are the Democrats that need it for their own political survival. And I think Nancy Pelosi would rather have those seats be held by Democrats than Republicans.
Yeah, one last question I want to ask about this. So this morning Trump said he wouldn't mind a long trial. And on Fox News last night, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he's working with the president's lawyers to draw up Senate trial procedures. Let's listen.
We'll be working through this process, hopefully in a fairly short period of time, in total coordination with the White House counsel's office and the people who are representing the president in the well of the Senate.
Okay, so the question, total coordination, is this the way it's supposed to work, Rick?
Well, constitutionally, it certainly doesn't look like it. The Senate stands as a jury in a trial with the president. Functionally, that's the way things have broken down in a partisan nature. But I'm not convinced that President Trump is going to get the kind of trial he wants. Mm. Mitch McConnell is saying publicly that, yes, there'll be total coordination. But I don't know that he's got the support inside his own caucus to have a long, drawn-out kind of a trial that would include calling witnesses like Joe and Hunter Biden, for instance. I don't think senators are really inclined to do that. And I think they're also – they've been publicly and privately warning the president, careful what you wish for with a long, drawn-out trial. The other side would be calling witnesses as well, and that might be embarrassing. If they can dispatch of this within, you know, a 2 to 3 week span, I think there would be a lot of interest in the Senate to do just that, notwithstanding what the president is saying.
One of the things I find most interesting about this week is that we had historic division in Congress, and yet we had historic cooperation. Look at all the stuff that got done. There was, you know, it looks like there's a deal to replace NAFTA, the Defense Authorization Bill, which includes family pay for federal workers, family leave policy, a deal to avoid a government shutdown next week, money for the president's border wall. Sue, make sense of that.
Well, some of it's the timing. If you watch Congress, you know, December is always one of their most productive months as things pile up and they want to get it out the door before they go home for Christmas. But clearly there's some political incentives here. And I think it's important to understand Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She is not a zero-sum politician. She is not someone who looks at a win for Donald Trump and thinks, therefore, it has to be bad for Democrats. Something like USMCA has mutual benefits. Yes, it is, ironically, giving the president one of his biggest priorities, probably the day after they vote to impeach him. But this is also something a lot of her Democrats wanted to pass. A lot of those freshman Democrats who were coming up on the first end of the first year of having the majority and looking at a pretty thin list of accomplished things that they have that they can go home and say, this is what our majority's for. It also does give Democrats a talking point to say, look, yes, we stand up to the president when we think he's wrong, but we can work with him where we can.
Let's talk a little bit about what is going to happen, something else really big next week. We mentioned it a little bit, but the debates, the Democratic debates for 2020, how much will this impeachment story, we've already heard the candidates talk a lot about it in previous debates, influence the 2020 campaigns for Democrats? Will it drown out their ability to talk about any issue besides the impeachment? We'll start with you, Susan.
Well, one of the curious things is the Senate trial is going to be happening in the weeks in the run-up to the Iowa caucuses, when normally the political conversation would be consumed with the Democratic primary debate. The jockeying for sort of oxygen in the political debate is going to be fascinating. Again, this is new ground. We've never been here before. So it's going to be a bit harder, especially as several senators are going to be jurors in the trial. People like Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts, Bernie Sanders of Vermont are going to be spending their time in the Senate and not on the campaign trail of Iowa. I don't know how it bounces. Yeah. I don't know how it's going to shake out, but they are certainly going to be some of the jurors we're watching most closely next January.
Let's hear a little bit from Elizabeth Warren, who took some swipes at her rivals, Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg.
They are spending time in fundraisers with high-dollar donors, selling access to their time for money. Some of them have spent months blocking reporters from entering those fancy closed-door affairs.
Rick, this week we learned that after pressure from Elizabeth Warren, Buttigieg is now allowing reporters into his fundraisers, and he also disclosed his clients that he worked with at the consulting firm McKinsey. What do you make of that conflict between Warren and Buttigieg this week?
Well, it's a transparency primary playing out where the Democrats are jockeying to show how open and accountable they can be. I find this to be a fascinating debate that will play out on the debate stage in Los Angeles next week, that Elizabeth Warren sees a real threat in Pete Buttigieg, especially in the early states where he has surged in Iowa and New Hampshire. Her sense, her campaign sense, is that Buttigieg really hasn't gotten the right kind of scrutiny. I also find it fascinating that Democrats are engaging in this argument at the same time that these momentous issues around President Trump are coming to the fore. So they, yes, impeachment is everything, but Democrats are still finding new reasons to disagree with each other. And that will be an interesting split screen next week, coming right after the expected impeachment vote, to have the Democrats fighting about other issues entirely, trying to get some attention right before the holidays.
All right. I was just going to say,
and there will be several people on the debate stage tomorrow. Next week. Andrew Yang is now qualified. There'll be a lot to watch for.
That's Rick Klein, political director at ABC News, and Sue Davis, congressional correspondent at NPR. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
You're welcome.